G'day, it's Ben Sorensen here, sunning myself by the beach and proudly bringing you some of the most requested Real Country moments on our summer series. We'll also be releasing our summer series plus some bonus interviews that we didn't have time for all on our free podcast feed. Now, you can find it on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, or any other podcasting app. Simply do a search for Ben Sorensen's Real Country, then click download and subscribe, or just head to our website, realcountrymix.com. Now, to this week's show, it's more Real Country Gold.
Quiet, numbskulls, I'm broadcasting.
Ben Sorensen's Real Country, bringing you the stars of country.
Top of the morning to you. This is Ben Sorensen here, and for the first time in history, this is my Real Country direct from Ireland, thanks to our friends at Tourism Ireland. This week, I'll be bringing you some of my adventures through the Emerald Isle and some of the characters who helped me experience them. So when we think of Ireland, we think potatoes. Wrong! Although they do love their spuds in Ireland, they're actually imported from Persia. So there you go, we all learned something today. So I set out to uncover the real Ireland, and rather than express it in interpretive dance, I chose stories from the Book of Kells, the Swan Bar, the world-famous Sheridan's Cheesemongers, the Little Museum of Dublin, and I set out to translate some Irish slang. But first, a great track and a solid link from Australia to Ireland. This is Tanya Kernaghan with an Irish blessing, kicking off Real Country's Irish special.
Life is a journey, and the further you go, the quicker it seems to pass by. But the love of a friend is a gift without end. So as the road unwinds, may love and laughter light your days and warm your heart and home. May good and faithful friends be yours wherever you may roam. May peace and plenty your world with joy that long endures, and may all life's passing seasons bring the best to you and yours.
Amidst the most beautiful Trinity College of Dublin, in one of the buildings resides another addition to my list of favourite humans, and one of the warmest, most intelligent people I've met in a long time. Joseph O'Gorman, Assistant Junior Dean with degrees in philosophy, physics, the history of ideas, and most of all, life. Joseph was kind enough to spend some time chatting about the Book of Kells.
Tell me the cultural significance of the Book of Kells to Ireland and the Irish people?
I think that the Book of Kells is symbolic of a cultural structure that was present in Ireland in the late first millennium. And it focused, of course, on the church. And I think it adds to the story told of the land, the island of saints and scholars, which is extremely important insofar as it gives a capacity to look back at a cultural identity going back over millennia. Particularly important in the development of the notions of the people, the nationalist ideals in, here we go again, the late 19th century. And it's that, I think, which is a significant part of the role that the Book of Kells would play in terms of its importance to the Irish people, or the sort of a zeitgeist or something, if you will. Its importance as an artefact is that it shows us the connectivity, as it were, within the world at that time, because the materials being used in the book, the designs and decorative motifs that we see operating within the book are drawn from such a vast area of Europe that it clearly indicates that the island of Iona, as part of the Irish church influence sphere, was connected into the world in a way that otherwise we wouldn't have evidence really of. It shows that there was a global village, as it were, well before the idea of this global village we now have sprang up. And I think that is another important and significant aspect of the book. And also when actually seeing it, just sort of stripping all that away and looking at the physical object itself in the casing, it is, for the individual visiting, a moment to just think about the fact that here is something that has survived for 1,200 years, not without bumps and scrapes along the way, but nonetheless gives us an opportunity to look at a piece of work created, even just a singular design, created by somebody motivated by a desire not only to beautify the word of God, which that person would have felt very strongly about, but also to be able to take a gift that he would have conceived of as being given to him by God and express it in the world. And for a moment say, I was here. This is me. This, in a sense, is his immortality. And that is, you capture that in, you know, just one of the little the capitals or little, even just little designs, not necessarily the overarching designs, big pieces. Sometimes it's more difficult to focus in that way because they're presented in a certain way. They are certain iconographical traits that they follow. When you see a little bird drawn in or a humorous element of the text, that they are trying to say, that's the opportunity that the artist is to say, this is me, look at me, and you're still seeing me here 1,200 years later. So I think it works on sort of three levels, the impact of the book.
Well, I think it's absolutely amazing, and I think I'm having the best time here in Ireland. I'm just upset that I'm not spending more. And I'm also upset that I'm not spending more with you. Thank you so much, Joseph.
You're very welcome. My pleasure entirely.
That was a shorter version of a much longer mind-feeding chat. Joseph and the Book of Kells were both so interesting, I could have easily spent a full day there. Now let's travel back home for a bit. This is Adam Harvey with his latest track, Kids.
7 a.m. and you're at it again. Get them up out of bed, get them showered and fed. Kids. Yeah, I'm talking about kids. In the car on your way, and you're late every day, and they're fighting and crying, and your blood pressure's climbing. Kids. Oh, I'm talking about kids. You wonder how you ever lived without kids. Oh, beautiful kids. When you're old and gray and you tell them one day that you're moving in, that's when you get your revenge on kids. That's when you get them back, kids. Well, I don't know, I got two of my own that take over the bathroom, take over the phone. The boy or the girl you brought into the world, now you wonder if they'll ever leave home. But go back in time when you were a child. God's just paying you back for some of the things you did. You lose all of your bones and all of your hair when he gives you kids.
Out for granted.
G'day guys, this is John Lynham and you're listening to Ben Sorensen's Real Country.
You've heard us on the radio. Now check out the Behind the Wheel website. At behindthewheel.com.au, you can browse all our latest car reviews and car product reviews. You can also watch our video car reviews and check out all the latest auto news as well. There's also more info on our latest competitions, the entire Behind the Wheel podcast archive to listen to or download, and links to our social media accounts as well. And make sure you leave your comments, give us feedback, ask for advice, or just let us know all about your car. behindthewheel.com.au, where motoring starts.
Quiet, numbskulls, I'm broadcasting.
Ben Sorensen's Real Country Interviews, bringing you the stars of country.
Welcome back, it's Ben Sorensen here, and this is the Real Country Irish Special. Thanks to our friends at Tourism Ireland. For all things country, make sure you visit realcountrymix.com. Now, Australia's known for their confusing slang, and the Irish certainly do hold their own too. I caught up with Irish group Old Hannah to chat music and slang while outside a closed bar in Dublin. Now, I have come halfway across the planet, and it's not just for the Guinness, it's not just for the amazing dairy products, it's not for the simply fantastic lamb, or the history or anything like that. I've just come across a couple of Irish boys here, and I thought that, you know, why not have a chat to them? And these two Irish boys happen to be part of a super group called Old Hannah. G'day, guys. How are you?
Very good.
Great, Ben. How are you?
Now, Anthony and Luke. Now, obviously, Lucy is part of the group as well. Lucy, how are you? Not here. So there was, she had a birthday party, had a big night, and, you know, priorities changed in the morning when the alarm went off.
I
don't know if the alarm did go off. The clocks changed today.
Ireland has so many more fantastic little pubs. They've got some great connection to live music and a great connection to local live music as well. How does that change your world as a musician?
I think, well, for me and Luke, it was quite helpful in Ireland growing up, even from the age of 15 and 16. We were playing together since we were 15 in various groups, acoustic, electric, whatever. And over the past maybe 7 years, we've probably done 200 plus gigs a year.
A year?
Yeah, maybe more. It was 1 year we did a silly amount. And that's acoustic and electric and all kinds. So when it came to with Lucy and Leo as well, they were kind of in on that with a lot of the gigs. It was just such an avenue to play here. I mean, you walk around Dublin any night, there's live music. Every, be it covers, original, you find it whatever you want.
Now, Australians are known for their slang. There's a lot of slang there. And the Irish have a pretty impressive array of slang there as well. So can you explain to Ignorant Traveller some of the Irish slang that I'll hear when I'm cruising around?
The number one is the crack. The phrase, the crack, sort of spelled C or A-I-C, as opposed to, you know, the bad kind of crack that people know about.
The expensive crack.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's just a word for fun and general. Like, if you'd ask your friend, how was last night? Did you have a good night last night? Was it a good gig? And they go, oh, it was great crack. That's the number one phrase that you hear in Ireland, I think.
Yeah. Where you meet someone, you go, oh, what's the crack? And they go, oh, yeah, nothing much. What's the crack with you?
Yeah, it's just like, the hello. It's how you gauge everything. The crack.
The crack. There was another line as well. Savage. So
kind of like superlative for like unbelievable or deadly or great. It's like, oh, that was savage. Savage crack.
Savage crack.
Yeah, that's the one.
Spelled the other way, yeah.
It's funny to actually talk about that one because you use it so often in daily conversation, never actually single it out and go, what are we saying?
Yeah, when you go traveling or touring or whatever, you tend to be hanging around with people who are, you know, you're not hanging around with tourists. You might be in Germany, for example, and you'll be hanging around with German people, and they hear these phrases, and they're like, what are you saying? And, you know, what do you mean deadly? Is that not a bad thing?
Well, we tried to learn all the local German phrases then, like, it's a lot more fun.
Well, Germany's next on my list, so can you give me a bit of a head start on German slang?
Willst du mich verarschen? So if you go up to a bar and you buy a drink and it's whatever, $6, and then you can go, willst du mich verarschen? It's like, are you taking the piss? You have me for a ride? But so when we learned this, we had great fun saying it, but maybe not on every occasion.
Yeah, we didn't realise that, you know, in Germany people are a little bit straighter, like they say things how they are, you know, they don't.
Yeah.
You know, in Ireland we like to beat around the bush and
have some fun.
Yeah, and they have fun, but they say, when they say something, they mean it. It's not they don't really tend to make jokes like that. So you have to be careful with phrases like that and get you into trouble.
Yeah.
And deine Beine sind wunderschön.
So, no, what's that one, mate?
It's your legs are beautiful. So it's a good one in Germany walking around.
How you doing?
Yeah, doing all right. How you doing?
So let's have a quick chat about the single now. Irish Boys, which also happens to be the title track off the EP, Irish Boys, for, of course, you guys, Old Hannah. So tell me the story behind the song.
It was kind of half written in Sligo between myself and Lucy. We had been reading some stuff about the Irish guys, so to speak, went over to the States out of maybe necessity to work, and they ended up building the railroads, buildings, everything, like, kind of just getting into the culture over there. And with them, they brought their songs, their slang, their everything, I suppose, and had that integrated into American kind of music and culture. And for us growing up, playing predominantly country music with an Irish twist, it kind of was, it's quite nice to mar those things and together and to write a song about it.
Well, it's a great track, and I think that one of the most amazing things about country music, no matter which country you're in, is its ability to document the history and stories of a people. And I think that one of the things that really stood out about Irish Boys was that energy there behind it and the story there.
Mm. I mean, once you have a theme, then you can just kind of enhance it and write around it and write with it. It's mostly factually true as well. I mean, reading about the guys, they were from Sligo, South Sligo, and
Thomas Nash, he's talking about, he's mentioned in the song.
Oh, yeah. And then they met up with guys from Kerry and Cork, and the article, I'll send it on to you if I can find it. And they were just talking about the music they were playing and the differences between them and people who had just arrived and people who had been there already, settled. So, it's amazing.
Well, it is an absolutely fantastic track, Irish Boys, which is also the name of the EP by this fantastic group, Old Hannah, comprising of Lucy, who's still in bed asleep, Anthony, Luke and Leo. Thank you so much, guys.
Thanks very much.
Nash was killed while sleeping. They said he sided with the Union. Here's a rising, hear it coming. From
Charleston down to Richmond. Irish boys pushed the steel when all of those around them cry yippee-ti-yay while coming down the mountain. Before the midday, a railroad for a living, they left their bodies on the work line for just the change that they were given. Irish boys pushed the steel when all of those around them cry yippee-ti-yay. You tell me, won't you lay it on me? Why you left, you let me be, my Sarah Jane, with a heavy load to bear, yet softly she treads there. Come the morning, after the wild wind, I must wait for an answer. For my time, my peace of mind, and now she stirs. My Sarah Jane, her daddy's daughter, came in by the breakwater. You come home dressed up in oak, not a trouble on your brown or low to tote. And by my hand into this sand she goes, my Sarah Jane, all covered in snow. I loved her so, my Sarah Jane, all covered in snow. I loved her so.
Another Ben Sorensen Real Country interview. Hear this interview and many more at www.realcountrymix.com.
from a closed bar to an iconic historic bar. This is my experience with Ronan Lynch, a third-generation publican in his family's establishment, which happens to be one of 12 listed Victorian bars left in the city.
This whole area, if you actually look at the street here, it's quite narrow. Like, you know, so this was called the Dublin Dardanelles. You know what the Dardanelles are, do you? See, this is the Greek mythology that when the boats, there was actually this kind of a sea lane, and the boats always was a treacherous stretch of water. And every time the boats went up, they'd always be shipwrecked. And this area got the name of the Dublin Dardanelles, because every time, say, a battalion walked down here, kind of a load of British army, they'd be shot at or stoned or whatever. Barricades set up and all this kind of crap. And this is because the buildings are very high, and you would have had like a huge density of people, like 100 people in each kind of house. So there was a lot of kind of, they weren't happy with the British being here. So obviously you can imagine. And then, of course, you could just fade into obscurity and be, so this is why it was a very rebel orientated area. Now, we actually have a picture in 1922. So 1921, War of Independence, we signed a treaty with the UK, separated the country. Some were happy with it, some weren't. So the guys who weren't happy with it in 1921, they kind of had the Custer's last stand, and they occupied a load of buildings in Dublin. So we were used again. So you can see here, this is picture of the building in 1922. Now you can see the facade of the building here, all the bullet holes, sandbags and everything here in 1922. This is one of the last buildings to fall. So what you would have had was Jacob's Biscuit Factory. Now the street was a bit different. There was a clear line of sight between Jacob's Biscuit Factory. Couldn't get the guys out, put them in Fannigan Funeral Undertakers, couldn't get them out. Brought up an armoured vehicle from the forecourts, which is kind of the real, everybody would remember the forecourts being occupied in Dublin because they blew the hell out of that anyway. And then they got them out of here. But I reckon what actually happened was there was a great place to actually make a stand, because you can make your political statement, and you had the added, you know, incentive that you could have a pub here with beer. So obviously I reckon the beer ran out. I think they'd have, there was no way these lads were going out of there anyway. But surprisingly enough, we have the newspaper cuttings, and nobody was caught, because what they did was, this is all a solid wall. Street would have been terraced at the time, so it's evade capture. As we were saying earlier on, tenements, all buildings, loads of rooms, loads of people. They actually just had false doors, so basically they punched a whole load of doorways in, and then totally just fade into the masses and away. Wow. So nobody was caught. So that was the thing. Now, the pub has been in my family since 1937. My grandfather bought here in 1937. And my dad was born and reared here. As you can see, these are all rugby jerseys. So my dad would have played rugby for Leinster. He was captain of Leinster, which is kind of one of the four provinces in Ireland. Played for Ireland in the early 70s. And then he played for the British and Irish Lions in 1971. He played in all four tests against New Zealand. And I'm sure, as you're Australian, aren't you? So you'd be delighted to hear that it's the only Lions team that's beat New Zealand in a test series. So you can remind them, if you see any New Zealanders, tell them that you're in the bar of a guy who beat New Zealand in a test series. It's never been done in 110 years, you know, before or since. So they all love that. All the New Zealanders come over here. Rub it in, you know. That's one of the things.
Thank you so much.
Nice to meet you, Ben. Right.
Don't forget, I'll be posting some of the full-length interviews of my trip to Ireland on the podcast feed. So head to iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, or your favourite podcasting app and download and subscribe to Ben Sorensen's Real Country. After the break, I discover the Little Museum of Dublin and get my cheese on as I continue my adventure through Ireland on Real Country.
This is Peter McWhirter, and you're listening to Ben Sorensen's Real Country.
Hi, we're Georgia Fall.
And we're on the road to launch our new album, thanks to the support of NRMA BusinessWise.
Their legendary roadside assistance keeps business trucks and vans on the road and makes sure we don't let our fans down.
See how they can keep your business moving at nrmabusinesswise.com.au.
NRMA BusinessWise, keeping Australian country music on the road.
Because the show must go on.
Diana Corcoran, and you're listening to Ben Sorensen's Real Country.
We Welcome back, it's Ben Sorensen here, and this is the Real Country Irish Special. Thanks to our friends at Tourism Ireland. Don't forget, for all things country, still visit realcountrymix.com. Now, without a doubt, this is a must-see and do for everyone that travels to Ireland, the Little Museum of Dublin. It was such a well-set-up space with all the warmth and hospitality that the Irish are known for. I caught up with Sarah to tell me a little more.
One couldn't come to Dublin without experiencing the Little Museum of Dublin, and you can hear it's echoey, which is how we know it's a real museum. Sarah, how are you?
I'm great. How are you doing?
Splendid. Absolutely splendid. My nose is a little bit cold, but
enjoying the Dublin weather.
Well, it's summer, isn't it?
Yeah. Some say.
Now, tell me the story of the museum, because you've got a wonderful collection of treasures here celebrating the history of this wonderful town.
Absolutely, yeah. We're based on St. Stephen's Green in a beautiful Georgian townhouse. The museum was set up in 2011, so we basically, our director and curator did a public appeal to the people of the city to help us tell the story of the city. So our entire 20th century Dublin collection, which is our main collection on the first floor, tells the story of the city with artefacts that were given to us by the citizens of the city to tell their own story. And it's quite an incredible collection. It charts the changing role of the city over the last 100 years, and so we run a tour of that collection on the hour every hour, and it's just a lovely warm welcome to the city. It gives you kind of an intro to the city in half an hour is how we like to promote it. But then we also have temporary exhibition space, which helps us to look at other strands of the city's narrative. And so at the moment we have an exhibition on Guinness and its involvement in the First World War. A large number of their employees went off to fight.
And incidentally, I've just spied on the sign behind us, because it's all about learning, that Arthur Guinness paid half their wage while they were away, his employees were away at war. You'd be flat out finding anyone to do that now.
They're incredible. It's when we were working on this exhibition, a large number of descendants of Guinness employees actually came through to us with stories about their own parents and grandparents. And it's incredible. There's this real emotional connection and sense of gratitude towards the Guinness company, because they were just so employee focused. The goal was always to look after the employees, to look after their families, and it's really quite admirable. It's really.
Now, you're saying that the museum's filled with bits and pieces that have been donated by the people of Dublin. Now, the Irish are known for being a little bit quirky and different. So, what's some of the more unusual things that you would have had donated?
Okay, some of my favourite objects, for example, we've got this lovely letter that was written to a boy called John Hughes, who he was growing up in a house in Dublin and was told as part of a school project, go research your house, find out about its history. And his mum said, you know, write a letter to the last boy that grew up here, who was in fact Samuel Beckett. And so we've got a letter upstairs which was written in 1976 from Beckett, who at the time was living in Paris, and writes this letter to a 7-year-old talking about his own learning, his own experience growing up in the house. And he signs off on, if you ever run into my ghost on the grounds or in the property, give him my regards. Which you'd imagine would scare the life out of a 7-year-old boy. But it's, you know, that just gives you a sense that we try and talk about the key elements of the city, including the writers, including the political events, including the social history, but finding a unique way to talk about the subject.
Well, I think it's absolutely beautiful, and you're doing some great work, and it makes it so much easier to come to one space to get that that story behind all the other things that we're going to see.
Yeah.
And that really makes such a huge difference. Thank you so much, Sarah.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Well, I took a stroll on the old long walk of the day. I met a little girl and we stopped to talk of a fine soft day. And I ask you, friend, what's a fella to do? 'Cause her hair was black and her eyes were blue. And I knew right then I'd be taking a whirl around the Salt Hill prom with a Galway girl. We were halfway there when the rain came down all the day. She asked passed me up to a flat downtown on a fine soft day. And I asked you, friend, what's a fella to do? 'Cause her hair was black and her eyes was blue. So I took her hand and I gave her a twirl. And I lost my heart to a Galway girl. When I woke up, I was all alone, with a broken heart and a ticket home. And I ask you now, tell me what would you do if her hair was black and her eyes were blue? I've traveled around, I've been all over this world, but I ain't never seen nothing like a Galway girl.
Was Damien Leith, Galloway Girl, from his album Songs of Ireland. Now, while Sarah told me about the Little Museum of Dublin overall, it was left to expert tour guide Adam to show me some of the highlights from the collection.
I've got a first edition copy of James Joyce's Ulysses in the cabinet here. Actually, if you have a look, we have it open on the last page, okay?
Oh, right, skip to the good bit.
Absolutely. The last word in the book is the word yes. Do you see that?
Yeah.
And beside that word yes is a full stop. And that full stop is the only bit of punctuation in that entire chapter. I swear to God, I would smother my mother for some punctuation in that book. It's what makes it so difficult to read.
I've actually just spawned a brick.
Yes, the Dolphin's Barn brick.
And incidentally, that's not another brick in the wall, that's another brick on the wall.
Absolutely. That's from the Dolphin's Barn works. And do you remember we were talking about how awful and overcrowded the tenements were? Well, that overcrowding was going to continue in Dublin until nearly the 1950s, when they started to build the suburbs and move people out of the centre of the city. So that little brick there that's over the mantelpiece is a reminder that there was a brickworks in Dolphin's Barn, which is on the south side of the city. So because you pointed at the brick in the other room,
yeah.
Let's have a... See this here, this little piece of granite in the fireplace?
Yeah.
Now, it's actually from Nelson's Pillar, this huge pillar that used to stand outside the GPO. And in 1966, the 50th anniversary of the 1916 Rising, it was blown up. The IRA actually blew it up. They decided they didn't want a statue of a British war hero in the centre of O'Connell Street. So in the middle of the night, they blew it up. And the next morning, all that remained of the huge pillar is this scutty little stump. And everybody in Dublin collected a little piece of the pillar, and that's a little, and people who come in and go, that's a bit of the pillar. But the thing that they really enjoy is the next day after this was blown up, the next day the Irish army were called in to get rid of that little stump. And what they did was they packed the base of that stump full of explosives and they blew it up. And when the dust settled, that little stump was still there. But every single shop window on both sides of O'Connell Street were completely destroyed. So it does beg the question, you know, who the hell trained the Irish army in the use of explosives? We won't discuss that.
Thank you so much.
Not at all, guys. Absolute pleasure to talk to you.
After the break, Evelyn and I talk and eat cheese in the world-famous Sheridan's Cheesemongers and some great tunes from Lee Kernaghan and Catherine Britt.
Hi,
there, it's Ashley Monroe from the Pitt Blannies, and you're listening to Ben Sorensen's Real Country.
I got a one-way ticket as far as it goes, and I came out like a rose.
Calling all entertainers, Talent in Your Town is a new online directory for entertainers who want to be seen and heard. Singers, dancers, magicians, bands, comedians, jugglers, illusionists, face painters, fireworks, kids' parties and a whole lot more. Whatever you do, Talent in Your Town wants to hear from you. Talentinyourtown.com.au, the one-stop shop for all your private or corporate entertainment needs too.
Plus amusements.
Check it out, talentinyourtown.com.au.
Headlights are so much better than they used to be. But there is one downside to today's plastic headlight lenses. They go all cloudy, dull, and sometimes even an off-yellow colour. Not only does this bring down the look of your car, these less-than-perfect lenses aren't giving you the beam strength and clarity that your headlights were designed to. There is a simple fix, however, and it doesn't involve getting new headlights. It's the T-Cut Headlight Restoration Kit. It's really simple to use, it works great, and clear headlights are just a few minutes away. Search for the T-Cut Headlight Restoration Kit in the Altrex Auto Accessories online store at altrex.com.au.
Ben Sorensen's Real Country.
Welcome back, it's Ben Sorensen here, and this is the Real Country Irish Special. Thanks to Tourism Ireland. For all things country, still visit realcountrymix.com. Before we get into the business of cheese, let's go to one of the most requested tracks over the last few weeks. This is Lee Kernaghan, Spirit of the Anzacs.
A drover drifting over western plains. He's a city lad, a clock down Flinders Lane. They're in the trenches at Lone Pine and on the Flanders firing line. A wheeling band of ordinary men. He's all of
Without a doubt, Evelyn from Fabulous Food Trails is one of the most knowledgeable foodies I've met, and I've met a few. With a passionate running commentary, she walked me through some of the best and most iconic food offerings in Dublin. So I meant to ask in there before, what varieties of potato are typically Irish? And how did that evolution come about?
Well, the one that would have been the famine potato, which is the one people always ask about, is something, it's called the lumper, and it's deeply unattractive. It's actually called the lumper because it's such a lumpy potato. But it was not blight resistant. We here would eat, we like really dry, floury potatoes in this country. That's what we eat. We don't like what we would call soapy potatoes, which would, in England, they do like. So things like queens we love. There's things like the first crop potatoes you'd get here would be Orla's, Home Guard. They'd be my favourite.
Yep.
And they're always kind of celebrated, but we also give out about them because we say, oh, you know, it's really lovely to have new potatoes, but they're a bit soapy yet, you know. But now, the really kind of lovely, flowery ones that burst open, everybody Irish loves those because you can have a load of butter on them.
And they soak it up.
Or crispy bacon. Yeah.
So where are we off to next?
No, our next stop, actually, I'm going to bring you up to is Sheridan's, and they are cheesemongers.
Oh.
And the thing is that, you know, we kind of lost the tradition of cheese making here over the years.
Which is interesting because of your passion for dairy and
well,
the abundance of fabulous grass.
Yes, but history-wise, it makes sense because we know that in the 1100s that they were actually grazing cattle just across the River Liffey. The monks in St. Mary's, they were using fields with wild garlic in order to get the flavour of the wild garlic through to the milk and returned to the cheese. But And the cheeses that tended to be made here were soft cheeses, you know, so they didn't take as long to mature.
Yeah.
We're still finding them in bogs in the Midlands because that's where they would have been stored.
Oh, because the temperature.
It's a kind of preservative.
Yeah.
Bog water. But you know what? They know everything in here. And okay. Sheridan's is, you go into Murray's in New York, Neil's Yard in London. They all know Sheridan's. La Fromagerie in Paris. It's fantastic. Leo and Moen know much more about this than I do, but it's not all Irish cheese. What percentage
of it? Maybe a third of it is Irish. Like, yeah. We do a lot of French and Swiss and Italian, Spanish.
Yeah.
Mostly Irish and French.
Can you tell me through some of the Irish cheeses?
Yes, the Irish cheeses.
Some of the more traditional ones will be the washed rinds, Malines, Ardrahan, Gubeen and stuff like that. That was actually the first one to be made in Ireland.
So do you find the flavour of the cheese varies from where the milk comes from?
Very much so. Very much so, yeah. Quite like the milder ones as well. You know, that's got a kick to it. The Fond d'Ambert, Bleu de Verne, and French blues, they're not that strong. They're just...
Oh, you're right.
Yeah.
I'm going to finish that off.
Thank you so much.
Pleasure.
That was absolutely amazing.
Goodbye, my love, to my dear. I will be waiting in the twilight of the day by the penny you're saving. Feel the wind flood through my hair, didn't see it coming.
Incidentally, Leo from Sheridan's also happens to be one of the band members of Old Hannah as well. What a small, beautiful world it is indeed. Well, that's your lot for the week. Feel free to continue the country conversation with me on social media. You can find us at facebook.com/realcountry. Also on Twitter at realcountrymix. And for those that want a little something extra and special, I also have an array of photos on my Instagram account. So if you're keen to check them out, head to BenSorensen1. That's Ben Sorensen and the numeral 1 on Instagram. Or all the links are, as usual, available on realcountrymix.com, including the podcast of this show, plus our bonus content. Also, a huge thanks to our friends at Tourism Ireland, all my guests on the show, and to Real Country's international field producer, Tanya Strawn. There was way too much Ireland to fit in one show, so I'm back with part 2 of my Irish special next week at the same time on the same station. But as they say in Ireland, it's not goodbye, but until we meet again.
Ben Sorensen's Real Country.
You've heard us on the radio. Now check out the Behind the Wheel website. At behindthewheel.com.au, you can browse all our latest car reviews and car product reviews. You can also watch our video car reviews and check out all the latest auto news as well. There's also more info on our latest competitions, the entire Behind the Wheel podcast archive to listen to or download, and links to our social media accounts as well. And make sure you leave your comments, give us feedback, ask for advice, or just let us know all about your car. behindthewheel.com.au, where motoring starts.